Rānei te tanga katoa ko rongomene te tātou programu i roto i te rā. I te mea e taeke e whātua pōpinga maata tō tātou ki runga i te tātou programu kua kiritike i atu te au a kanononga te mātou i ana no te taitua ki roto i te tuatou nei. Te rekarekane eo i te akakite atu e te tangatai ko tātou tamaine, te tuaine ko te mema ngā teitei. Poto Williams tō tātou whātua ngā teitei ki runga i te tātou programu no te rā no te tei o tumu manako pōpinga kia uriuri ia ki akari me e te manako no runga i te rei. Ko te tumuanga te reira i te mga tauianga o tātou programu i roto i te rā. Karawe i tia uriurianga manako ki aia ki roto i te reo Engariti. First and foremost, we are delighted, honoured and privileged to have the Honourable Poto Williams, Member of Parliament for the Constituency of Christchurch in the New Zealand Parliament, speak with us here on our Cook Islands program. Kia ora. Kia ora ana, good day to you, Poto. Welcome to our program.
Oh, kia ora ana, and thank you very much for having me again. It's a real pleasure and an honour to be able to speak to you and all of our family in Melbourne and across Australia. So thanks for having me on the show.
Likewise, from previous times you've spoken with us where your family and friends on this side of the Tasman were glued to our radio program to listen to you, I'm sure nothing differs on this occasion. First and foremost, let's start off with your trip to the Cook Islands last year. How was it being there for the 50th anniversary of our self-government status?
Oh, it was an absolute pleasure to be able to travel with the New Zealand delegation on the Prime Minister's airplane. So there were many dignitaries, members of Parliament, including members of the opposition, members from other parliaments. We had Premier Talangi on the flight. We had members of the diplomatic corps, and we had key members of the Cook Island community from all across New Zealand who were on that flight from New Zealand to the island of Rarotonga. Unfortunately, we were only there for 29 hours. However, in that 29 hours, it was an absolutely action-packed trip. We got to see the end of Te Mai Vanui dance celebrations, and I have to say that it was wonderful to see our culture on display to such a high standard. It was very, very encouraging. You know, young people engaged in cultural activities and really speaking and using the language in a way that makes me feel quite encouraged, because I know that our language is one of our treasures and potentially can be at some risk. So I'm really encouraged by our young people picking up the language and the culture and doing it to such a fantastic quality and standard. We were also lucky to have receptions with the Honourable Henry Puna and his cabinet and members of the opposition as well. We were really treated wonderfully. The formal receptions from the High Commission, the Prime Minister and members of the community, they were wonderful. And then we got to go to the actual celebration day and to have representatives from every island. In fact, some people were saying, oh, there was only four people left on Manahiki, for example, to look after the pigs. So as many people from the outer islands that could come to the celebration came, and the government, you know, chartered various forms of transport, as did other partners. You know, other governments got on board and supported to get the population to Rarotonga for the celebrations. And if I can talk you through part of the day, what was wonderful was each of the partners associated with getting the Cook Islands to this momentous occasion, all of the countries were honoured in some way. The island of Manahiki, for example, had the job of presenting gifts to various members of the diplomatic corps from around the world. So did Palmerston. All the islands had an opportunity to present gifts of thanks to these various diplomats. When it came to New Zealand, of course, I couldn't resist. I had to get up and support my New Zealand diplomats and the New Zealand party, and there was a lot of dancing that happened. That's all I can say. So the night concluded with fireworks, and just prior to that, there was a parade through the town. It was a wonderful celebration. And it caused us time to stop and think about the relationship that New Zealand has with the Cooks, with the special relationship, the self-governing and free association. It does give us some opportunity to reflect whether the Cooks and New Zealand and their partnership achieving all the things that they need to achieve as partners, and also that the Cooks is able to maintain its own sovereignty, but while having the supporting hand of New Zealand and to help in situations that it can help. So all I can say, it was a wonderful celebration, and I was very sad not to be able to spend more time on the island, but while we were there, we were certainly well treated.
Well, I'm sure our people, our listeners, are very appreciative of the insights and the running commentary there that you have provided about our celebrations. Let's now move on to your own town, city, Christchurch. Unfortunately, as we've heard and seen through the media on this side, something occurred over the weekend, and of course it's such a reminder of Mother Nature at work, and of course not forgetting that we are now almost 5 years down the track from the devastating earthquake that occurred some years back there in Christchurch. Share with our listeners what's happening, what's the latest development nearly 5 years on?
Oh yes, now unfortunately for our community in Christchurch, we had another earthquake. It was a 5.7, which doesn't sound too bad, but it was actually quite a violent shake on Sunday. It's been called the Valentine's Day earthquake, and it was a reminder of the fact that, you know, we had thought as a community we were starting to get to the end of the quakes. In recent weeks and months, the occurrences of aftershocks has been very minimal, and they've been very low magnitude and haven't been very troublesome at all. So to be shocked with quite a severe shake on Sunday reminded us that we actually need to remain vigilant, and that Christchurch isn't through the earthquakes as yet. It is a reminder too that we've got the commemorations for 5 years since the February 22nd quakes, in which 179 people lost their lives. Well, that commemoration is on Monday. So what it's done for our community, we've been very lucky in that the rainfall has been quite minimal over the summer, so there's very little water around. So liquefaction, which was one of the biggest issues in my area particular, didn't occur very much. It was very minimal. There was very minimal damage to houses, some cracking. The biggest physical issue, I guess, was there were some rocks, some large rocks that were dislodged in the Sumner area. That's the Port Hills area, although nobody was hurt. And they've actually, since that time, they've removed a lot of those rocks, so they no longer pose a danger. But for the biggest worry has been, though, that our community is anxious again. They have been getting used to things, getting back to normal, and to have this shake on Sunday means that a lot of people are feeling very anxious and a bit worried. Children are a bit upset. So that's been, for me, the most significant part of the earthquake, that our population is again worried about, is there another big one on the way? And that's not healthy. And I really feel for our community, because it's not easy to reassure somebody when they're scared of what might happen around the corner. But in saying that, we have been getting some fabulous messages of support from around the world, including our family from Australia have been getting in touch and just checking that people are okay. And that's really encouraging to know that everybody is still with us and holding our hands as we go through the next few days.
Well, our best regards for you and the people of Christchurch remain poto, and we wish you well despite the enormity of this anniversary right on our doorstep very soon. We'll take a moment from our talk today as we go to a short break, and then we'll resume our talk with you shortly after that. Akamare te itstata e retukirunga I tatatu atuiroro wira ki te sbs.com.au/cookislandsmaori no to tatu o akononoanga o tatatu program no tira. Kirunga katoa I reira e akarongo tue koto e ki te tue koto I te ngā tua ti akatete mamo ia te I vai o ia ki vao I runga I tatatu program no tira no te mea e manu iri ngāti ti tatatu ki runga I tatatu program e o manako mamata te tai te ianuano ia kia uriuri ia ki akarongo tatu I runga I tira program o tira.
SBS I roto I te reo Māori o te kuki airani nā runga I te rātio a tuiroro wera e te tereponi a paipai.
We're speaking with the Honourable Poto Williams, Member of Parliament from New Zealand, on varied wholesome issues here on our Cook Islands Māori radio program. Poto, let's talk politics here. Tell our listeners why you and others were booted out of the New Zealand Parliament some months back.
Well, it's still very much the top of my mind. And to your listeners who may not know the story that sits behind the eviction of the women MPs from Parliament, what happened was Calvin Davis from the Labor Party was questioning the Prime Minister on the question of detainees being sent to New Zealand from Australia and the kinds of values that we have as a country where, you know, what's the relationship between Australia and New Zealand like when they can return New Zealanders here? Many who have grown up in Australia or have made significant lives in Australia and really are Australians more than they are Kiwis. So Calvin was questioning the Prime Minister, and the Prime Minister's response to him was that we in the opposition, and in particular in the Labor Party, were backing rapists and murderers. Now, those of us who have either worked in the family and sexual violence community or have lived experiences of those difficulties were hugely offended by his comments, and we made it very clear that we do not back rapists. And members of our caucuses stood up to challenge the Speaker to say that that was offensive and that we required the Prime Minister to apologise. The Speaker refused to make the Prime Minister apologise, so we walked out of the House. Those of us who were offended walked out of the House. The next day, which is the day that really made the news around the world, we had talked together as women members of the opposition about how we felt about the day before in the House, and we had made the decision that we would ask the Prime Minister through points of order, which we are permitted to do as members of Parliament, to apologise for his statements. And that's when you would have seen, if you've seen the coverage, Materia Ture, Jan Logie, Catherine Delahunty, myself and other members of our caucus stand up, disclose their issues themselves, because many of us have been impacted by family violence or sexual violence ourselves, and ask the Prime Minister to apologise. Again, the Speaker refused to make the Prime Minister apologise, and the Prime Minister himself did not stand and apologise. And that's when the Speaker actually turned off the microphones in the House. So it meant that when women stood up to make a point of order, they couldn't make it because they were not heard because the microphones were turned off. And at that point, the Speaker said if another member stands up and makes these points of order, they will have to leave the chamber. That's when I left, and that's when all of the women members who were supporting our message left the chamber. And that's what made the news around the world, that women in our parliament were shut down by the Speaker. We weren't allowed to speak. And our response to that was to say, if we can't speak in this House, we will leave the House. So we did. I have to say that we have, in the days and weeks since that event, spoken with many, many people, women and men, who have said they support our actions, that it really raised a whole lot of issues around the problems that we have in our families, around family violence, around sexual abuse, and that they really supported our stand, and they were very upset with the Prime Minister. For about 2 weeks after that, there was a petition running. About 13 or 14,000 people signed the petition asking the Prime Minister to apologise. We had a short recess at the House, and then when we came back, the Prime Minister did indeed stand and apologise for those comments. So we got a win in the end, but it took several weeks before he realised the enormity of his error and apologised to the House. That's it in a nutshell. We've had lots of opportunity to talk about the difficulties we have in our families since then, which is really good, because sometimes it's a topic that's really hard for families to talk about. But the fact that the women members of Parliament were able to stand up on behalf of women and men and children who are impacted by violence in our homes, I think is a very powerful statement.
Well, thank you for that clarification there, Honourable Member. And while we're still on the same subject there, what's your party's stance on Australia deporting New Zealanders who break the law and fall into such Australian laws here, deeming them unfit to remain here?
Well, we're very clear that we had thought our relationship, New Zealand's relationship with Australia was one of, it was a much more significant relationship than with any other country. You know, we talk about, you know, our ties being, you know, that we call you guys our Aussie cousins. We had thought our relationship was better than one where our whānau are being sent back to New Zealand with no support and no resources. And often, you know, yes, there are the cases where wrongdoing has happened, but there are also many cases where someone won't won't meet the character test because they have an association with someone who's unsavoury, but they've not broken the law themselves. There's some real anomalies in this piece of legislation, and it captures everybody. Our view is that the relationship with New Zealand is such that they should have special conditions for New Zealanders. The other thing I want to say about that is this, that many of our family have moved to Australia or either been born there or moved there as small children or even have been there for a significant period of time, have been, you know, working and contributing to the country in Australia and really, by all intents and purposes, are Australian, and they have very limited resources and ties back here in New Zealand, if any. And to send somebody back here with no support, you know, not even knowing how to access our social services or our social security, not having a bank account, having no New Zealand identification, it's criminal. And what is happening here is that the New Zealand government isn't geared up to receive the numbers of people that have been coming over. It's been really the support of the community organisations, the NGOs, and the local people that have supported detainees coming through. We have no idea about the numbers that are coming across, but we know that there have already been quite a few arrived in New Zealand, have nothing, you know, very limited funds. So services here have had to scramble to support those people because you can't leave people without money, without places to live, without access to accommodation. It's terrible. What I've been saying to families in Australia is this, that until we can actually change the law, which won't happen under this government, there is no chance it'll happen under this government, but until we can actually negotiate with Australia and get some changes to the law, you must prepare your loved ones for coming to New Zealand. There is no doubt that they will either be detained in some of those dreadful places like Christmas Island or they'll be sent to New Zealand. Now, if they are being sent to New Zealand, and I've had some conversations with our Cook Island Consul General and others here in New Zealand, that the community here needs to be prepared to support our families coming back. And likewise, the message I want to give to you in Australia is to say, please reconnect with your family here in New Zealand and make them aware of any of your loved ones who are being returned here, because we need to do what we can as a community here to support their reintegration, because yes, they can reapply to go back to Australia from here, but to be perfectly honest, the likelihood of them being able to be successful in that process has proven to be very, very low. So my advice is really to encourage the families here in New Zealand to step up, but also the families in Australia, if you know your loved one is going to be sent to New Zealand, please make contact with your family and your community here so we can do something to help.
For sure, Poto, this is going to be a long talked about issue in times to come. Still, I am aware of a young Cook Islander who was born here, raised here in Melbourne, who happened to have broken the law and will be deported in weeks and months to come. Before we continue on with our talk with you, we'll go to a short break. A reminder to our listeners, of course, that you can visit Cook Islands page at sbs.com.au/Cook Islands Māori for more of the podcasts and the program itself that we are running each week, including today's one, of course. We will put this extensive interview with the Honourable Poto Williams on our webpage today. Akamare te itangata atoroto I tatatu kapite sbs.com.au/Cook Islands Māori. No teo, akarungurungo anga mai ki tatatu programu. Ia tatatu ka akarungo poto tuki te tai akatangi anga. Ka oki ako umai e rera ki tatatu tamaine te tuaine. Ia Poto Williams, mema paramani o Nutireni. Ia ye e kumakuma maine ki e tatatu.
SBS I roto I te reo Māori o te kuki airani. Orunga mai I tao tua ki runga I te Facebook.
Ai ko tēnā tētā I rāwhenga karauko ia kōtou te ārāwhi mei I tātātou prokorāmu. Honourable Member Williams, one issue that remains viral on this side of the Tasman, and with Kiwis in particular, is the change of flags. What is it, why, and do we need it?
Well, it's one of those things that our Prime Minister thinks we really need to change our flag, that actually as a country we have grown up and we should have a flag that reflects the way we are as a nation. The opposition to the flag change has been really interesting. We've had many of our RSA, you know, our return services, our current serving armed forces, and people who have an interest in historical connections who are opposed to changing the flag because it will take the Union Jack off the flag. And the Union Jack is really, you know, as we say here, that's our whakapapa, really. That's what ties us to, you know, our colonial past. And it's very important. And it's the flag that our soldiers fought and died under. So it has an important place in many people's hearts. For other people, it's actually just about, we don't see an issue. There's no problem with the current flag. For other people, they're saying, we haven't got a constitution in this country. Why would we change our flag when we have no constitutional reform? It's not the right thing to do it. Other people have said it's a branding exercise. Now, those are the people who are opposed to changing the flag. The people who are for changing the flag think there is confusion between our flag and the Australian flag. They think it's a chance for us to show on our flag, you know, the important things in our nation. And the silver fern was picked as, you know, kind of the biggest, the most important symbol in our nation. And a few other things. It's a branding exercise that shows that we're modern. My own personal view, and this will be a conscience vote in the House, my own view is that I agree with our old diggers that many people fought and died under that flag, and it has a special significance in that regard. And I also agree with the people who are saying that we need constitutional reform before we need a change in flag. So we need to change it. We need to have a constitution. We need to establish ourselves as a nation under our own right, under our own constitutional laws, which we currently don't have, before we do anything about the symbols of our country. We need to establish our rule of law first as a nation before then. But that's my own view. Currently in polling, it would appear that around 70% of the nation don't want a change. They want to keep the old flag. But the referendum starts in a couple of weeks' time, and that will mean we decide whether we keep the old flag or whether we go to the new version that's been put up, which is blue and black with the silver fern through it and the Southern Cross on it. So you'll know in a couple of weeks' time, we'll all know whether we keep it or not. But yeah, as I say, it'll be a conscience vote in the House if it comes to that. And there's been, even across all of the parties, there are differing views, but I know that there's about 70% support to keep the flag. But I'd be interested to hear from you what people are saying over there in Australia about the flag change.
Well, with our interaction on this side, there seems to be, similarly as you are encountering there, as you have shared from what's being talked about there in New Zealand. Although on this side, it still remains hugely to retain the old, the same flag as is now, with a small percentage supporting the change to a new one, being progressive and everything associated with the current times. Of course, we will await with bated breath as to what you on that side will finally decide in a few weeks' time. One issue that has been quite in our faces on this side, if I can put it that way, is the free trade agreement signed there in recent times. If it is a free trade agreement and New Zealand is part of it, surely it's a good thing for the country. Again, why is there opposition to it also?
Well, you're absolutely right. There are two schools of thought on the TPPA. As a party, we negotiated free trade agreements with China. It was the first free trade agreement with China. But this one is slightly different because it has, you know, there are 12 parties who have signed up to this agreement. And it's a very complex document. So far, there's about 6,000 pages of text that sit around all the various agreements. To be perfectly fair, trade is only a small component of it. Probably about 20% of the document is actually related to trade. The rest is about the other relationships that we might have, the other partnerships we might have. So it is actually a partnership agreement. The biggest opposition to the TPPA here has been two things, really. One of them is a clause which will allow people or pharmaceutical companies and others who have a trademark or a patent on a particular drug or type of service or good or whatever to extend the patent life of that particular product. We have an organisation called PharmAc here, which is a government organisation that's charged with finding the cheapest pharmaceuticals around the world so that we can keep our health costs down here. So they go out, they buy pharmaceuticals in bulk and get a really good price. Now, if pharmaceutical companies are able to hang on to their patents longer, what it means is that innovation and new generic medications coming on the market, which drive the cost down, won't be allowed to do that until the end of the patent. So it might be that a patent is around for 5 or 10 years, and then these innovations innovative companies can come in and make generic drugs, which drives the price down. What they're saying now is those patents will go for 15 or 20 years, which means that those pharmaceutical corporations have the benefit of all of that money, and we have to pay potentially higher costs because there's no competition in the market. Now, that's a major issue for people with disabilities, for older people, for people with real serious health concerns who have relied on Pharmac getting the best price for pharmaceuticals around the world. That's one issue, and it covers a range of topics across various countries have various patents that they're concerned about. The other thing, that, and the most important aspect of this, is the issue of sovereignty. What is the major concern around that? As a country, if we make a decision or run a piece of legislation that might harm a corporation in Canada or in America, for example, if we decided to pass legislation in this country which banned a particular type of branding on cigarette packets. So we're currently looking at plain packaging legislation, as you have done in Australia. What that means is that the corporation that makes those cigarettes may take New Zealand to court because our legislation has impacted on the profit that they're able to make from selling those cigarettes here. The cigarettes are a bad example because that's been excluded from the deal. But if you can imagine, that's a very topical one and one that people in Australia will know. The opponents to TPPA are saying is we should not allow our country to be put in a position to be sued by a corporation overseas. That is not right. We are a sovereign nation and we have the right to make laws in the benefit of our own people. We cannot be dictated to by corporations. So that is a key issue around the TPPA. There are some other concerns around foreign ownership of land here in New Zealand as well, which is a very topical issue, but primarily it's around the issue of sovereignty. As a nation, we have the right to make laws in the interests of our people and we should not be dictated to by corporations under threat of being taken to court. So that's it in a nutshell. We don't support the TPPA. We know that countries like Canada, who've recently had a change in government, are reviewing their position on TPPA and they're going to talk to their wider population about where people think they should be. The previous Prime Minister Harper in Canada was very pro, and with the new government they are evaluating their position. So we know that there are other countries that may not sign. We know there's some difficulty in the US with getting the bill through the lower house. So it's a case of watch this space. We're not going to really know because we've got a couple of years to ratify this agreement that everyone signed a couple of weeks ago, and we're not really going to know until it hits some of those bigger parliaments like the American Parliament to see whether they will actually sign the deal or not. So it's a case of wait and see, I'm afraid.
Well, given that there are thousands of pages and years till it's ratified, as you've pointed out, I'm sure that this is going to be one of those talking subjects we'll be hearing throughout times ahead. Well, as we near the end of our conversation with you, we'd like to thank you very much, Honourable Porter Williams, Member of Parliament for Christchurch in the New Zealand Parliament, for taking the time out to speak with your fellow cousins, family here on this side of the Tasman, here in Australia. Final thoughts to you before we end our chat with you today, but looking forward already to another session with you in the future.
I just want to say, look, thank you so much for all your kind thoughts. We've had many messages from Australia after the Valentine's Day quake, and it makes us smile to know that our family across Australia are thinking of us. We also think of you, and we know that there have been difficult times in Australia, and we send our love out to families who might be contending with the issues that weather might bring across the whole of Australia. And also the cricket test is coming up on the weekend, so there's another opportunity for us to cheer on our homelands. Even though we are Cook Islanders together, I know that we are great sporting nations as well. All I can say is for Brendan McCullum's last game as the captain of the Black Caps, I hope he has a great game, but I'm sure you, my Australian cousins, are hoping that you guys have a great game too.
Well, may the best team win, Honourable Porter Williams.
Thank you very much.